I'm Ryan. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Ray Heinisch, and I'm joined here in the studio, a virtual studio, if you will, with Blythe Auberg. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, how's everybody doing today? I hope you guys are all having a great day.
Yes. You know, as you can hear in our voice, we're extra excited about today's show.
I think we're always pumped up. Are you kidding me? Extra excited.
Well, you know, extra excited because today's show is about motivation, like ways that we can get ourselves motivated and out there doing the things that we know we need to be doing, right?
Yeah, you know what? I think deep down we all know what motivates us. It's being real with ourselves and maybe finding new tactics to make those things work.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes we do have to play tricks on ourselves, right? To kind of convince us or to trick ourselves into getting things moving. And, you know, some of the things we're going to talk about today might be a little bit on the tricky side, right?
Yeah, they might be. But I think what we're going to be talking about today might be something that I start to implement.
Right. So this is definitely a golden nuggets show, meaning that probably not everything we talk about today is going to resonate with everybody who's listening. So you've got to kind of look at it as there's a golden nugget somewhere in the show for you. Mm-hmm. There may be two or three.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry about the stuff that doesn't work. Don't worry about the stuff that may sound a little bit too airy-fairy for you. And just use the stuff that you feel like you gravitate towards, right?
That's right. Yeah, exactly right. There might be some really valuable information in here. It might be something that just makes it click today. So if you're the type of person who likes to have a pen and paper handy, I would say get one now. That way you can write down the little golden nuggets that you hear throughout the podcast.
Excellent. And as you know, this is recorded, so you can always go back and re-listen, as a lot of our listeners do. Okay.
Hey, that's a great idea.
So I'd like to start, if you don't mind. Would that be cool?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. And I know you got your own tips, and I'll start with one of my own. Now, Blythe, are you familiar with what's called affirmations?
Yes. I've used them before.
Okay. Like an affirmation is where you basically, okay, so you have something that you want to achieve, right?
Yes.
You have not achieved it yet. So you basically talk to yourself, right? You say things like, for example, if I have 10 pounds to lose, I've done this in the past. Everybody, I think, out there has at some point done or attempted to use affirmations in their lifestyle, right?
Yeah. And if you haven't, there are tons and tons of books out there. There's even websites on like how to write an affirmation.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so we've all done it to some extent. Some have done them well, some probably not so well, but yeah, let's give an example. Okay, so, you know, there's been points where I'd say, okay, I want to be 10 pounds lighter. So mm-hmm. an affirmation basically is where you say, okay, I want to be 10 pounds lighter. And instead of saying I want, you act like you've already achieved it. So you say to yourself, I am
mm-hmm.
10 pounds lighter, right? Or I
yes.
am 10 pounds lighter, or I've lost 10 pounds. So you basically are speaking in terms of present tense as though it is real today, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that, you know, I did this for quite some time, and I never really found that it worked. Was that your experience? I mean, I think there's a problem. The problem is my brain didn't buy it. Like when I would say I'm 10 pounds lighter, my brain knew that I was not 10 pounds lighter, that I had not lost 10 pounds. And it basically rejected the statement as untrue. You know, if you've practiced affirmations, then you know what I'm talking about. Because when you say these things to yourselves, there's like you get the overall concept, and it may even make sense to you, but as you're practicing it, you can tell as you're saying it that nothing's really happening inside, right?
That you're kind of like you're kind of faking yourself out. Like do you just feel funny when you're doing it?
You feel like you're lying to yourself, and you know that you're lying to yourself, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
And so, I never really found affirmations to be terribly helpful. Then I came across a technique, okay, from this book that was written by a gentleman by the name of Noah St. John, okay? The book's called The Secret Code of Success, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Noah basically confirmed in one of the chapters in the book that basically what I already knew, and that is that affirmations were basically a load of baloney.
Okay.
You know, he stated that basically what I already know, which was that affirmations are rejected by your brain, and so they don't really result in any significant change.
Mm-hmm.
So then he introduced me to a whole new concept, okay, and a whole new way of thinking. And he called this, instead of affirmations, he called them affirmations, okay? Really, the only difference is an O in there, A-F-F-O-R-M-A-T-I-O-N, rather than affirmations. In a nutshell, okay, your brain can reject untrue statements. In this case, it's an affirmation. It's an untrue statement that you're acting or you're trying to pretend as though it were real. When it perceives something as untrue, it basically just locks the door and then hangs a sign that says no vacancy. You know, there's no room for it in the brain because the brain does not like untrue statements. That's why one of the worst things that a friend can do to you is lie to you about something significant, right?
Right.
Your brain hates lies. Now, he talks about is that the brain has a back door, and basically that back door is always open. It's always unlocked and it's always wide open. If you can use that back door, then you can make these things work for you. Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
So here's how it goes. Okay. Your brain is basically a problem solving machine. Mm-hmm. It has a very interesting characteristic. It can't help but answer every question posed to it. If I were to ask you, Blythe, okay, if I were to ask you something like, what color is your hair? And I would say, before you answer that, I do not want you to think of the answer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you, whatever you do, do not think of the answer to this question. What color is your hair? The brain will basically answer the question, and there's nothing that you can do to stop it, right? If I say, don't think about the answer to this question, what color is your hair? Your brain automatically pops into the, you know, into the brain an answer. In your case,
mm-hmm.
blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because the brain must answer every question that you ask of it, okay?
Okay.
The brain believes, as you mentioned, every answer it gives. Every answer that it gives to a question, it perceives as a truthful answer, right? Mm-hmm. Have you ever been in a situation where someone asked a question, like maybe you're watching a movie, Blythe, and mm-hmm. They ask, you know, where is that actor from? I recognize him, but I can't quite pin what other movies they've been in.
Okay, happens all the time, yeah.
And, you know, you'll say, without a shadow of a doubt, you'll name the actor. And mm-hmm. you'll say, they were in this movie. I know they were in this movie. And there is nothing that anybody can do to convince you otherwise.
Okay.
And, of course, it ends up turning out to be wrong, coming totally wrong, right?
You have okay.
a totally wrong answer. Have you ever had that happen?
It happened yesterday.
You're kidding me. What was the movie?
No, I was watching the movie Troy.
Uh-huh.
And the guy who is Orlando Bloom's brother in the movie, I think his name is Eric Bana.
Okay.
Or, anyway, the gentleman who plays the Prince of Troy. I was like, I know him. He was in another movie. It's not Gerard Butler. And I was trying to think because I think they might be both Australian or something like that. And I said, I think he was the Incredible Hulk. And I still haven't Googled the answer to find out if that was really him. And I can't believe I've put it off because normally I will just grab my phone and Google it and look it up. But I'm like 99.9% sure that guy did play the Incredible Hulk at some point in time. Now, I could be absolutely wrong, totally fictional maybe, but my brain believes that to be the truth.
Well, Edward Norton played the Incredible Hulk.
Well, the original, right?
No.
I mean, haven't there been Hulks?
In the most recent movie. The original was Lou Ferrigno.
So I am wrong. I know Lou Ferrigno.
So, you know, my point is that the brain, it doesn't matter. If it gives an answer, it believes that answer to be totally true,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And it kind of goes to the old joke about men, and that is that men, we say that we're not always right, but we're never in doubt, right?
Okay. Sure. That makes a lot of sense.
And until proven otherwise, your brain's going to believe every answer it's given, okay? It has
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
All right. So the problem is... we all basically ask the wrong questions. Have you ever had this with your clients? They may ask questions of themselves like, why am I so fat? Or why can't I control myself around cookies?
Mm-hmm.
Or why am I so worthless? Or you know, they may say something like, those are some good examples. Like, why am I so fat? Why can't I control myself around cookies or cake or pizza or whatever? They may say, why am I so worthless? Some people, you know, depending upon the situations of their life, they may believe themselves to be worthless.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the problem. The brain has to answer the questions that it's been given. So it might say something like, you're fat because you have no willpower or self-discipline. Or
okay.
you're fat because you're a lazy slug. Or you eat cookies because you're weak. Or you're worthless because you aren't smart or attractive or lovable. You know, those are the kinds of things that the brain will give you because it has to answer the question it's been asked. Right?
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah.
So, in a nutshell, okay, you ask a question, the brain answers 100 out of 100 times. If it doesn't know the answer, guess what it does?
What?
It fabricates one.
Okay.
It can't stand to have an unanswered question floating around. That's why you believe, you know, this actor is somebody who's probably not. Because if your brain doesn't know, it has to fabricate an answer. And and in situations, again, it's a believable answer, right?
Right. And this is why people, I think everybody listening to this right now can relate to exactly what you're talking about. I think every single person here has been in some sort of a disagreement with somebody else where you know you're right. And then when you find out you're not 100% right, you're like, well, okay, well, but he looks almost just like the guy. And then you come up with like reasons why you believe that you were right. It's like your brain tries to back up those reasons.
That's scientific fact too. I mean, that we know that for a fact, mm-hmm. that's exactly what the brain does. Is memory is not as good as we think it is. And
right.
There are gaps in that memory, and the brain can't stand to have those gaps, so it fills them in with fictional material. And we've all done that when we may have imagined, or we may have thought that this memory was true, but then our friend says, that's not how it happened,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's because right. the brain fills in the blanks.
Yeah, okay? That's pretty cool. Yeah,
it is pretty cool. Now, you know, for many, this is the curse, okay? The curse is this process happens subconsciously. We don't even know we're doing it. We don't even know we're asking specific questions. Like when we talk back to mm-hmm. ourselves, mm-hmm. we don't realize how the brain works. We just run our default programming. And let me tell you that for most people, that programming sucks, okay? But there is a way. There is a way that we can use this programming to our advantage, okay? And that's where Noah St. John comes in and his tactic called affirmations,
mm-hmm.
okay? Unlike affirmations are repeated in the forms of questions. Instead of asking questions like, why am I fat? Instead, we ask, why does my body burn fat so easily? Okay, so you see what's happening here?
Mm-hmm. Changing the question rather than the answer.
Right. Because what ends up happening is if we ask the question, why am I fat? Our brain will go to work finding answers to that specific question. And there's always going to be an answer for that. You know, I had two cookies last night. That's why I'm fat. Or I have difficulty around pizza or spaghetti or whatever our vice is. Our body can easily fill in the gaps and find answers to that question. Mm. But when we start asking, why does my body burn fat so easily? Or why do I have so much willpower? Or why am I so strong? Or why am I burning so much fat and feeling better every single day? Or why am I so darn beautiful or handsome? You know, it doesn't matter. You get to choose the question. And because you choose the question, you get to choose the path that your brain takes.
Hmm.
So now the brain starts finding answers to the questions that you're asking because it can't help itself, right? I can't convince myself that I'm 10 pounds lighter, but I can ask my body, why does my body burn fat so easily? And it'll start fabricating the right answers. It might say, well, you know, because you went to the gym yesterday, or because you remember that time when you had the option of eating the cookies or not, and you willed yourself not to eat the cookies. That's why. Because
mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, or you've been eating all healthy breakfast now for a month, and it's become such a habit now you didn't realize that could make such a big change just by eating healthy breakfast every morning.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Think about how powerful this is. I mean, let's look at it from the perspective of our social archenemies. Like, we all have an archenemy in our life, right?
Yes.
You know, and when humans want to hurt someone, one of the best ways to do this is to ask them a question like, why do you do this to me? Or why are you so hurtful? Or mm-hmm. why are you being such a jerk? Or why are you so selfish?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden, we start thinking, shoot, you know, am I selfish? Or why am I so selfish? I mean, that's powerful. That's why you have to be so careful with the types of people that you have in your life.
Yes.
Because the most damaging people are the ones that ask you the most damaging questions.
Mm-hmm.
You ever realize that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've all probably experienced that at one time or another, whether it was your best friend in first grade who turned around and said, you know, why did you wreck my backpack? And the last thing you wanted to do was ruin your best friend's backpack. you know, but that was very hurtful to you at the time, or, you know, maybe in a relationship in your adult life. Yeah, I think we can all relate to that to some degree.
Oh, absolutely. We all, you know, just really think about it. Like, think about the most toxic relationships in your lives. And I'm willing to bet you're going to find that those toxic relationships, those people were masters of manipulating the questions that they ask you in your life.
Yeah.
You know, that is because why do they do that? Because the brain has to answer the question that it's been faced with. You can't really refabricate the question. Like, if somebody says, "Why are you such a jerk to me?" You know, your brain cannot. Your brain answers that question almost instantaneously. It can't question the question, unfortunately.
Right.
At least it doesn't do it consciously or subconsciously. You have to consciously say, wait a minute. This person just asked me a question of why am I being a jerk? But really, who's being the jerk here? Am I being the jerk or are they being the jerk?
Right. Either that or it happens like 2 hours later and you're like, oh, man. And you start rethinking and like recalculating the whole scenario of how it could have unfolded. I think we've all been there, done that too.
Yes, it's that stairway remorse that we have.
You know, yes.
We don't have the remorse until we're walking up the stairs going to bed and we're like, ah, I should have answered the question this way. That would have been so witty.
Yes. You know, I think this is a great way. So you can take that whole negative thing of asking jerkish questions, negative questions, and turn it around to be positive, motivating things to yourself. Right. These are type of questions you can start addressing to yourself. Like you said, why do I lose fat so easily? It might sound funny, and I'm sure there are people chuckling out here as they listen to this. Like, I'm going to start asking myself those questions. People will, you know, if I ask myself, why am I so handsome or why am I so beautiful? You know, geez, life is rough because I'm so good looking. Most people will probably snicker at that. However, you start thinking that way, it becomes a pattern. And I think it's the pattern that we're trying to start.
Right. And, you know, I guess the big gold nugget here is you can't convince yourself that you are handsome or pretty or thin or that your body burns fat easily. Mm-hmm. But you can ask a question and force the body to come up or force the brain to come up with its own answers, its own beliefs to that question, because
awesome.
The presuppositions that there, when you ask the question, why does my body burn fat so easily? The presupposition is that your body burns fat easily. And now we just want to know why. Mm-hmm. And so the brain really goes to work to answer that question. I know it sounds like I'm repeating this over and over again. It's just, I want people to really get it. One of the first weight loss groups that I was doing, where we had about 18 people in the class. Mm-hmm. And there was a woman in the class who had done quite well. I mean, she was probably one of the people who lost the most fat in the group. But then there was a stint where she had gone like 3 weeks without losing a pound. And I could tell it was weighing in on her.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she was doing everything the same. And she couldn't understand why her body wasn't losing the fat. So I said, okay, let's try an experiment. I want you to use these affirmations. I want you to repeat for the rest of the week questions like, why does my body burn fat so easily? Just do it all day long before you go to bed, when you wake up in the morning, when you're at work. Why does my body burn fat so easily? Why do I have so much energy? Why does the scale keep going down like that? Why do I feel stronger and stronger every day? And I just want you to keep repeating that. And she's like, but I don't believe it. And I said, you don't have to believe it. I'm not making any statements. All I want you to do is just ask the questions. Just ask the questions. Just do this for me for 1 week. So she goes home. She does it. I didn't think she was going to do it, honestly.
Okay. She gave it a whirl. I like that.
Yep. No. Well, you know, I didn't think she was going to give it a whirl. That was the thing. I thought she'd leave and she'd just, you know, push it aside like it was nothing. But she came back the following week. She weighs in 4 pounds lighter.
Okay?
After 3 weeks, okay, of not losing a pound. She goes home. She does affirmations. She loses 4 pounds in that week. Now, how much of that is fat? I would say 50% of it is fat, and the rest is water weight and so forth. The point is that something changed. Something changed in her brain or in her body from the fact that she did those affirmations. Okay,
that's awesome. Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to believe it, just because you're not really making any statements. You're asking questions. If I ask you a question, Blythe, do you have to believe anything about the question? No, you just have to answer the question being imposed to you.
Right.
So I'm just saying, Yeah, this may sound a little bit airy-fairy. We may not understand all of the workings of what's going on in the brain that is leading to changes in the body, but this stuff's pretty powerful. It definitely is more powerful than affirmations.
Well, you might call me airy-fairy then when you hear what I'm about to say, but I have gone through periods, and now this is when, like, I haven't been in competition for, like, a year or more, because I think when I'm sort of like in competition mode, or just a step back from competition mode, where I'm really concerned about maintaining my weight, and it's always in the forefront of my thoughts of staying lean, what I'm eating. You know, I get to a point where I'm still on a maintenance plan, but I'm very, very strict. But I find that, like, after 12 months or so has passed and the quote unquote bug of competing has sort of subsided, I find myself, you know, I'll still step on the scale, I don't know, a couple times a week or whatever, just see what I weigh, and I'm the same. And then I'll pay a little less attention. I still make sure I get my protein in, because this, I've been doing it so long that the healthy eating is habit, but I'm more aware of when I'm eating something that is quote unquote off plan. Okay. Something that I wouldn't normally eat on a day-to-day basis. So maybe, like, the other day was my birthday. I had a piece of birthday cake. I wouldn't normally do that, but I didn't gain a pound. And I'm going to tell you that this was not done consciously, but I think it's because I care a little less. It is less urgent for me right now to be concerned about my weight. It's like on the back burner. And it's, number one, it's because I'm comfortable and I'm at a maintenance phase. Okay. I don't have a bunch of weight to lose. I'm fairly comfortable with where I'm at. But I've got a lot of other transitions going on in my life right now. So the whole weight thing and being concerned about, you know, how I look in the mirror, or what the number on the scale is, or what my body fat percentage is, because that's gone, I find that I've actually lost a couple of pounds. And I feel like there's a little bit of freedom there. I feel like I've sort of let go of the what was holding those extra couple of pounds I really would have liked to have lost. I feel like there's a little bit of freedom there. And because I've let go of the idea of, like, well, how am I going to get these 2 pounds off? I just can't figure out how I'm going to do it. And like you're saying, those are the negative questions we ask ourselves, that I kind of just let it go. And I find that I've dropped a couple of pounds and I'm pretty comfortable where I'm at right now. And the funny thing is it's less effort, and I find myself, I'll look in the mirror or step on the scale and say, wow, not too shabby for not being really concerned about it.
That's really interesting. And you're not the first person for whom that has been the case. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to a colleague of mine, and he who specializes in fat loss, and he was talking about how one of the first things he does with somebody who's not losing weight anymore, who's lost some weight but then it stalled, is he takes him off and tells him to go off everything for a week. Just don't focus on diet, don't focus on exercise, just relax for the week. Mm-hmm. He says almost universally the weight loss begins again. That there's something about letting go for a period of time and giving yourself a break. Some people report this when they go on vacation, you know, that they think they're going to gain weight, but in fact, they lose weight. For some reason, this is especially the case when people vacate to Europe, I guess because they're walking around a lot more. But, you know, I'd say that you're definitely not the first person to experience that. But they're right. There is something to be said about just letting go for a period of time.
Mm-hmm. And I find myself not being so critical. And I don't think it's because I look any different. I think it's because I'm reinforcing the positive of, wow, not doing so bad for, you know, not making it to the gym every day and not eating as perfectly as I would have, you know, prior to where I'm at. Or, oh my gosh, I used to beat myself up if I missed a protein shake. You need not physically beat myself up, but it used to ride on my mind. Oh my gosh, I'm 25 grams of protein short. And it would be like this whole mental battle. And that's pre-contest time. I'm not some freak that worries about it that much. But, you know, pre-contest time, I try really, really hard to meet my macronutrient profile. But now I find that I'm a little more relaxed and everything's okay.
You know, I was thinking about this not long ago. I was thinking back to the time when, my days post Your Fat, Give Me Back My Shoe,
Yeah.
You know, if you guys haven't had an opportunity to go back to one of the old podcasts and listen to the story of how I kind of got started in working with weight loss was, in a nutshell, you know, I had a crush on this girl named Kelly. And somehow we were at a neighborhood Christmas party, and somehow I had gotten a hold of her shoe. And so she was chasing me through the house. I was a chubby nugget-headed kid with Pepsi bottle glasses. I got cornered because I wasn't the swiftest creature in the world. And I turned around and she says to me, "You're fat. Give me back my shoe." And so I gave her shoe, went home, cried for a couple hours, turned my head. And for the first time, I saw in the corner of the room this small weight set, right? And that weight set had been there the whole time, but I really hadn't given it much mind because I really wasn't motivated at the time mm-hmm. to do anything. At that point, I did not realize that I was overweight. You know, life to a 12, 13-year-old kid, you just don't necessarily think about things like that. And the difference is this, is that at that moment, I decided, okay, I want Kelly to love me. So she doesn't love me because I'm overweight, I'm fat. Mm-hmm. So
that's something you can change. You can take control of that and change it.
Well, you know, and I didn't really know that until that point. You know, if you don't really see it, you can't change it, right? It's like the old G.I. Joe phrase, which is knowing is half the battle, right?
That's right. Yes, I love that phrase.
And then the other half is actually getting up and doing it. But here's my point, because it kind of speaks to what you're talking about, is when I decided at that moment that I was going to win the heart of Kelly by no longer being fat, I started to lift that weight, and I curled that weight, and I just did whatever I could do. And I didn't know anything about fitness, didn't know anything about diet. I just picked up the weight and curled it because, I don't know, maybe I saw it on TV someplace. I don't know. I then, you know, when I came home one day, I realized that, well, I had learned that people who are overweight because they eat too much. And so I said, okay, instead of eating two bowls of Fruity Pebbles, I'll eat one. And so I ate one bowl of Fruity Pebbles instead of two, and I would go to school and do my thing. Well, when I come home from school, I would just go and I would just run. You know, I didn't have any specific amount of time. I would just go out, put my tennis shoes on, go out and just run until I couldn't run anymore. I put my Walkman in my ears. You know, I had an old cassette tape of of songs that I would play. I remember specifically one that I would play as I'd run by Kelly's window, and that was "Get Out of My Car." You know, get it.
Oh, Billy Ocean. Oh my God!
Sing that for me, Blythe. How does that song?
Get out of my dreams. And into my car.
Yeah, that's the song. So that was so I would just run. I would just run until I couldn't run anymore. Then I'd go inside and I'd sit down and I'd watch TV. So there was, you know, it wasn't that I was really pushing towards any specific time frame. I was just doing, you know?
Yeah.
I was just being healthier. I was running because I figured that was a healthy thing to do, that would help me lose weight. Mm-hmm. And there was no time frame. I wasn't thinking, well, I need to have Kelly fall in love with me within the next month or my life is going to be over. Mm-hmm. As I recall back, there was no time frame. It was just the desire to become something better and become something more. And we're all born with that natural, innate desire to move forward in life, mm-hmm. right? The stress comes when we put really ridiculous time frames on it. That's when the stress comes, if you think about it. Because you know, this whole process of weight loss was, especially at that time in my life, was not stressful to me at all. It was extremely, extremely exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were elated. There was no urgency other than the fact of, I'm going to get this done as quickly as possible.
And you know what? As I recall, as I think about it, what was I doing the whole time I was running? I wasn't trotting about saying, oh, this is just terrible. Oh, this is so hard.
You know, and there were days, positive thoughts.
This was summer. You know, I remember during the summer, I would run every single day. And I'd sometimes twice a day, I would go out there and I would run. And it mm-hmm. was hot and I'd be sweating and it was hard work. But I don't ever recall thinking this sucks. I don't. Yeah. All I remember thinking was dreaming about Kelly, you know, dreaming about Kelly becoming my girlfriend. And so all that time, I mean, that's motivating, isn't it? When we can start thinking about stuff that pulls us forward, Yes. Know, rather than stuff that pushes us away. That's where I think it becomes powerful.
And can I add to that little bit of power, that little tip? This is something that I think a lot of people, if they would just give themselves the chance, I think that they would find that this works really well. Is that you find something that motivates you. We'll use Kelly in your case. Now, she got you to start the process. And then you would think about her throughout, you know, your workouts, and you're getting closer to your goal of having her be your girlfriend. At the same time, you're feeling great about yourself. You're feeling good. But I think if each of us can find something that motivates us, once you begin the exercise, all the endorphins that are released, all of the positive things you start thinking about and saying, I mean, I've been to the point where, you know, I'll be walking on the treadmill at home and I'll have a pen and paper handy because I start thinking of all these great ideas, all of the ideas and just the positive things that start coming from your mind while you're doing the exercise. So if you can get yourself started with the exercise, motivate yourself for 10 or 15 minutes. Once you get going, I promise you, you won't want to stop.
Even 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Because once you get started, then it kind of takes on a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the point is here that, you know, there's push and there's pull motivation, right? Push motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is the kind of motivation where you're moving away from something, right? Mm-hmm. You're moving away from a particular weight. Okay, I'm 250 pounds. I don't want to be 250 pounds anymore. So I'm gonna work out and exercise so that I'm no longer 250 pounds. That's mm-hmm. push motivation. And you know what? Push motivation is powerful. There's a point where on that scale where people will put their foot down and say, you know what? Enough's enough. I'm going to work out. I'm going to get healthy, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. They see a certain number, and that has just drawn the line in the sand.
Exactly.
I've heard of that many times. That and people looking at photos of themselves.
Yes.
You know, photos don't lie.
Seeing a picture and being like, oh, I don't look healthy. I don't look good. And because of that, they want to move away from that picture, so they start working out. Mm-hmm. That's great. We call that the pressure cooker, right? It's like the pressure builds up and builds up and builds up until, bam, it gets you motivated and you start taking action.
And you finally take action, right?
Right. The problem is this, is that all of a sudden, you know, after you start taking action, you may have some success, you may lose some weight. And as you lose the weight, that pressure begins to drop until it drops below some threshold. And then you no longer have as much fuel or energy to move forward, right? Because now you're no longer 250 pounds, you're 220 pounds.
So you've got to find something to keep the motivation alive.
That's where pull motivation comes
mm-hmm.
in.
Okay.
You know, when I made that that Your Fat Give Me Back My Shoe approach towards fitness and weight loss, you know, I was all pull motivation. I really wasn't thinking about a particular weight. I was all about eventually, you know, fall in love and marrying Kelly Harrington. You know? So that was what it was all about. So, you know, I think that push motivation has its place. It gets you moving, but it doesn't keep you moving because eventually that pressure begins to dissipate. And when that pressure dissipates, you lose that motivation. So you've got to find the pull. What is the thing that pulls you for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah. Do you have a pull? Do you have something that
I have a pull. Like my pull is that I want to be 90 years old and still out there doing stuff, dancing, traveling, you know, doing things that I want to do. I don't want to be like a 90-year-old that I see, you know, at a nursing facility. That's not what I want my life to be. I want to go to bed one night after having a fantastic day. And then maybe just not wake up the next morning. You know, that's kind of my pull is, you know, being in the work that I do, which is in holistic nutrition, dealing a lot with helping people through their conditions and their diseases. I don't want to have those diseases. I don't want to suffer with those things. I want to be healthy for as long as I humanly can. And as they say, die young as late as humanly possible.
Okay. I like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you've put yourself in the perfect position or you've created the perfect job for what motivates you. Mm-hmm. You're continually reminded on a day-to-day basis of the people that come into the pharmacy, you know, that what your pull motivation is.
Right.
I think that's pretty
cool.
Know,
my push, I mean, the push motivation aspect of that would be, I don't want to get diseases. I don't want to become diseased, but that's not what keeps me moving forward. It is the pull motivation of being somebody who's healthy, energetic, vital for the rest of my life. That's what pulls me. I don't want to be somebody who's riddled by disease for sure, but I don't imagine that. I don't imagine a negative. I don't imagine not being diseased. I imagine being healthy, vital, energetic. And that pulls me. It really does.
You know, it's funny. I don't see myself aging, or maybe a lot of people out there feel the same way. You know, I sat down at Thanksgiving dinner a few years ago. I was invited to a friend's house, and I sat down next to an 86-year-old gentleman who was like the wittiest 86-year-old I've ever met. He was the most talkative. His body looked old, but if I had never seen this man, I would have thought he was my age. You know, I'm, 37 now? So really, really cool guy. Anyway, I turned around, and I don't know what made me ask him this, but I said, can I ask you a question? How old are you? And that's when I learned his age. And he said, but I feel all of 18. And I said, I was wondering. I think it doesn't matter what age you are on the outside. You can always feel young on the inside. And keeping that alive as long as possible, like you said, staying young as long as possible, or what was your little quote you just said?
Die young as late as possible.
Die young as late as possible. I really like that.
Yeah,
that was kind of his thing too. I really connect with people like that, you know.
Yeah, you know, I do too. And to answer your question, that's what pulls me. How about you?
Well, mine is actually more along the lines of like seeing a certain number on the scale or not fitting into a certain pair of jeans. When I was okay, let me rewind just a little bit. Starting at the age of like 6, I started ice skating, and most of us know that ice skaters have big, massive thighs. Well, they were muscular thighs. And I worked out, you know, I worked out a lot. I skated twice a day, every day for hours on end. But my legs got bigger. And I guess when I kind of started into high school and went through like hormonal changes, I started putting on a little bit of body fat. As I got older, my thighs and hips, and I just started getting bigger. Anyway, long story short is I had this one pair of white jeans. I just love these things. And there came a day where I could no longer fit in those jeans. I was on the dance team, and we had won this like tournament, and we were going to Hawaii. And so I guess it was that I knew I was going to have to be in a bikini and my jeans were not fitting. So there was like an urgent situation. And I started exercising, and I realized how great, not just the ice skating, but I started incorporating, you know, resistance training. I had no upper body strength at that point in my life. I just really, really enjoyed doing that. It made me feel so much better. Nobody ever taught me how to eat right. My skating coach, you know, would tell me, don't go home and eat a bunch of junk food. But I didn't even know what junk food was. You know, my mom is this really... she's a cool chef. She'll make like Egyptian dinners and like Israeli food. She'll make all sorts of stuff, but talk about being filled up with couscous and bread at nighttime, you know, like heavy carbs. I was always eating stuff like that. So I started doing a bit of research to figure out how I could lose enough weight in time before we went to this dance competition. And I was a senior in high school, and we were all flying over to Hawaii together. It was like this really cool thing. So I started focusing on my nutrition, and I started doing things other than cardiovascular exercise, other than ice skating. I started doing some resistance training. I started doing push-ups. I started doing handstands up against the wall, anything I could come up with to exercise, because I found that once I did something, I would be like high for like 10 minutes after. So if I continued that, I just felt so great, and I really enjoyed the feeling of that. So that's my push. First of all, it became that I got to a weight that I was really uncomfortable with.
So that was the push.
That was the push.
The pull
is how great exercise makes me feel. I think, and now I've got, you know, it's been like 15 years that I haven't really missed much time in the gym. I've been eating clean, and eating clean meaning few processed foods, unless it's like birthday cake or something special. Because I am a normal person, but, you know, missing months at a time or something like that from the gym just hasn't happened. My lifestyle is in the gym and eating healthy. And I think, you know, everybody's got their law of relativity. Mine is if I stop exercising and I get out of what I find is a great routine for me, I don't feel as good. So I think it's the great feeling that I go after. I like being energetic. I like being motivating. People like that about me. It keeps me happy in a great mood. It keeps me energetic enough to keep up with my kids. All of those things are what keep me motivated on a day-to-day.
Very good. So, you know, I guess the point is we all have to find our own little muse, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, what I wanted to say about the affirmations is you can use some of the tips from the affirmations, like by leaving notes on your bathroom mirror, little post-it notes on your steering wheel in your car or on your dashboard in your car, to remind yourself to ask those positive questions.
Very good. And, you know, we do need those kinds of reminders. You know, until it becomes habit, we do need the reminders to tell us to do things. So make it so.
Yeah. Well, I think that was full of golden nuggets today. I don't know about you.
Yes, there were all kinds of great tips there. I hope that you got tons of good, useful information out of there. So Blythe, why don't you tell them how they can get a hold of us?
Feel free to contact us on Facebook. If you haven't already joined our Facebook page, it's Cut the Fat Podcast, all one long word. You can find our page on Facebook. We've got a new timeline page, which is pretty cool. Post up questions if you have any general questions there. Otherwise, you can look up my name on Facebook, Blythe Alberg, or you can also look up Dr. Ray.
Mm-hmm. And our contact form on our website is now working, so you can put your emails through that at www.cutthefatpodcast.com, and we'll do our best to answer those questions.
We're pretty good about getting back to people on email, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. As well. I love when people ask us questions, so I encourage you all to do so.
Guys, don't forget to review us on iTunes. That's helpful as well.
I love reading those reviews, don't you?
Yeah, they're great. It's always puts a smile on our face.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's it. I guess we'll see you guys at the next Cut the Fat podcast. Hope you enjoyed this one.
We are leaving you to the Grilled Lincolns. Once again, you can check them out on Facebook, the Grilled Lincolns. They've got a new album coming out. If you haven't checked it out already, look for them.
Yeah. Hey, Blythe, why don't we lead them to Get Out of My Dreams into
Your
Car? Oh,
my God. Get out of my dreams and into my car. Get in the backseat, baby. I'll do the backup. Oh, okay. My gosh. They're probably never going to listen again after us serenading them.
Oh, well. All right. Well, we'll see you guys at the next Cut the Fat podcast.
All right. Thanks for having fun with us.
See ya.